Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And their everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Of course, wash your hands, avoid close contact with people who are sick, avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth, and stay home when you're sick, cover your cough or sneeze, clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. So we got to obviously get into the Giants, and we'll do that in a couple of moments with our buddy Jordan Renan from ESPN.com. And the draft is 3 weeks from today. And as we wait for Jordan, let's go to a call or two and bring in Woodley in the truck. Woodley, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, man, right on time. I just got off work. First of all, real quick, fellas, I want to just give a shout-out to all my co-workers, the food haulers who are working hard, getting the food, the produce, the dairy into the ShopRites all over the area. I just want to tell my co-workers, keep working hard, fellas. Keep your hands clean. Stay prayed up and be safe.
We appreciate, Woodley, you reaching out and you telling us about all the people helping. So thank you so very much. And it's true. I mean, we sit here and praise, and rightfully so, the doctors and the nurses and the FDNY and the NYPD, and they deserve all the praise. But sometimes we forget about the people that are driving the food or helping you at the supermarkets, because those are, you know, very, very important jobs as well. All right, let's bring them in. The wonderful and talented and hopefully at home, safe and sound, Jordan Renan. Good morning, Jordan.
What's going on, guys? Yeah, I'm definitely home. I heard Rick telling his supermarket story this morning. I'm pretty much at the point where even when I food shop, I'm just going to order it, delivery, pay the upcharge, or go pick it up curbside at this point. Like, I'm at that point of limiting my risks.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to put a string on a tube sock, try to cover that thing up.
He won't even respond to you, and I don't blame him. Good for you, Jordan. Good. As awkward as dead air can be, he doesn't want to play your game. We have a pandemic going on, and you're going to make fun of him?
This is the time to play games, Dave. Someone needs to laugh. I need to laugh a little bit.
Jordan, you ever respond to
this? You just talked for 20 minutes about butter. I mean,
it was not 20 minutes. It was about muffins. It wasn't about
butter. All right,
butter.
So let's put you on the spot, Mr. You know, and I defended you, and now you're going to do that. But here's the question. A draft of any muffin, what would your first draft be?
Chocolate chip.
Oh, but that's more of a dessert muffin.
I mean, you go to get a muffin, there's always chocolate chip is always an option.
Yeah, but it's more of a dessert muffin.
I do.
I feel like a breakfast muffin. You're not having chocolate chip as a breakfast muffin.
Oh yeah, you're wrong, because for about 15 years of my life, I ate a chocolate chip muffin every morning for breakfast.
For some reason, it doesn't surprise me.
I respect that. I can absolutely 100% respect that.
Like, first of all, you know, when you go to like Dunkin' Donuts and you look at like they didn't in the past, but you look at like the calories of like, you know, the muffins and like the blueberry and chocolate chip. I mean, you're talking like 20, 30 calorie differences. It's minimal.
Well, you could, I mean, so, I mean, by the
I'm
way,
gonna go, if I'm going for the muffin, I'm just going to go full blast and give me the chocolate chip or the, you know, the one they have like the super chocolate one, like the double chocolate. Is
basically, yeah, that's nice.
Chip and the chocolate.
Coffee cake is nice too. Yeah, but if you're going to start looking at calories at Dunkin' Donuts, if you're going to eat a muffin, you can have two glazed donuts for the same calories as one muffin.
That is true. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've done that before as well.
All right, Jordan, let's get into the Giants. So before we get into the meat of the conversation, have you been in touch with anyone over at the Giants about their take on what's going on and the draft and not being able to be at team facilities and whether they're kind of disjointed about this or upset about this or pleased that the draft goes on? Like, do you know what the take is within the organization right now about all this?
I think they're all just looking to make the best of it. They know this isn't ideal, but it's not ideal for anybody. And I think that was remember how for a little while, the facilities in certain areas of the country were closed, and then the league made them close all the facilities. They got to the point where they said, well, that was because, aside from their, you know, limiting risk and being the smart move to do at this point, considering what's going on in our country. There were teams that thought that they were at a disadvantage, right? Because some teams were working out of their facility and going about, you know, business as usual as much as you can, and some teams were basically working from home remotely. So now they're all at home. So I think they're all they know there's limitations, and the Giants in particular. This is what I think from talking to people that concerns them. They are big into using their team, right? Like the you hear about some guys going and signing their contracts and going to third party doctors, right? This happened, and they would go and they would get their physical there. The Giants were insistent on. They want all their guys to go through their team doctors. And so they want their team doctors to look at guys. And that's for years how they use those top 30 visits for draft prospects, of bringing guys in and making sure that their doctors did visits. And they used them, really when Jerry Reese was there specifically, for a large portion of checking out guys that they had medical questions on. And I think that is what teams think is the biggest worry and concern right now. Those guys, and we're not talking about like the top of the draft. We're talking about guys maybe that didn't go to the combine, right? Guys that maybe you would draft in the later rounds, but if you have any medical questions on them, those now linger. And that's, I think, one of the biggest things that teams are dealing with right now is those guys that aren't as known as the top players, the Tuas of the world, that you now have to get the medical information and rely on other people for it.
Jordan Anand joins us on the show. Jordan, we had Mike T on a couple days ago, and he kind of took us through the gymnastics involved in making a pick, you know, trading or whatever it is, you know, having, you know, phone calls at the same time to get deals done. What do you expect this to look like as far as, you know, what the Giants war room or an NFL war room could look like with the social distancing?
That's a good question. I don't think anybody there, from my understanding, is they're coming up with all different kinds of contingency plans. I think it's fully possible. It's everybody sitting at home and on one big teleconference, basically, you know, one big Zoom-type meeting with the, and I think this year more than most, the people that are in the room, right, are going to be whittled down. Okay, so it'll be like the top three people, five people in the organization. And you hear about certain, like, you know, Bill Belichick, his draft room is like him and two other people, right? I think you're going to see that, like, it'll be Dave Gettleman, Chris Pettit, who's in charge of their college scouting, Joe Judge, and maybe like Mark Kahn, who's like Dave Gettleman's right-hand man as his pro personnel guy, maybe like, you know, Chris Maher. And there'll be like five people, basically, in like the main meeting. And it might be completely remotely. I mean, that's what it might come down to. I don't think that's out of the question, considering the limitations that we have right now and the things that are going on. Or it'll be them sitting at their facility, if we get to the point where they could do that, with five people in a room or three people in a room, whatever the limitations are now, sitting, you know, 6 to 10 feet apart and communicating with everyone else that they need to talk to remotely as they go along.
Jordan, I got to imagine Kevin Abrams would be in that room too, right?
He would. I was just going off of people at the top of my head, like, but you, really, who knows, right? Like, where do you draw the line? How do you draw the line? How many people are going to be allowed in a room? I think these are all questions you can't answer. It's like when people talk right now about, oh, they're talking about a season with no fans and this and that. Like, we can't look at next week, nevertheless, next month or 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the line right now. I think right now we're kind of at a wait-and-see approach with everything, right?
No, you're absolutely right, and you're actually leading me into my next question. The offseason, you know, going from year one to year two is typically where you see young players make their biggest jump, and with last year's top pick, Daniel Jones, being the quarterback and this being such an important year for him in 2020, you know, how is he going about his business? What are you hearing internally about what Daniel Jones is doing or what the organization is doing to support his development?
Yeah, I know he's in Charlotte right now, but really you can't do anything at this point, right? We're going to see what happens next week. And I spoke to someone about this recently. Like, they have all these plans. They're still waiting to see what the rules are, Chris. Like, nobody really knows what the rules are. They're going to send him the playbook. and try and, you know, teach it to him remotely. I mean, that's essentially what it's going to come down to. Colt McCoy was talking about it yesterday, about how he's going to have to, you know, be a resource to Daniel Jones and help him through this, because he was there in 2011 when they had the work stoppage, and he kind of went through a similar thing. So he's at home in Charlotte with his family, right? He's working out in like a home gym, competing with his brother and his sister in like home competitions, like ping pong, and, you know, playing in the backyard. He said he hadn't been throwing the football last I heard from him. So it'll be tough. It's not going to be easy. This is definitely, for teams that are changing systems, obviously they're the most affected, right? And with a young quarterback as well who's in that, the Giants, this is if there is a season, you know, this is going to be something that is restrictive to them and to Daniel Jones and potentially to his growth. I mean, it's going to take time, and they're going to try and do it. But here's the deal, Chris, right? Here's the problem right now from what I understand. Let's say they're working remotely. They're given the playbook, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have meetings, Zoom meetings, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to call it, FaceTime, whatever. But there's all these rules in the offseason, right? They negotiated the players, right, and the both sides. This is collectively bargained to limit the amount of time that they could get players to work in the offseason. How are they going to monitor this? How is the league going to make sure that teams aren't having Daniel Jones work 15 hours a day with a coach?
It's a great question.
How are they going to regulate this? How are they going to make sure that everything is working to the point where players aren't getting taken advantage of? So I think these things are still up in the air, and they're still being talked about behind the scenes between teams, the league, the Players Association, and until they come up with a system and we know what it is, and I don't think they fully have it yet, I think there's a lot of unknowns sitting out there.
Well, Jordan, let me ask you this question. I know that there is no official off-season program, but are team strength and conditioning staffs allowed to send workouts to players so they can do them on their own?
I think they will be allowed to, starting like the Giants, essentially starting Monday. The problem is they're going to have to really be tailored toward the individual, even more so than before, right? Who knows what each individual has at their disposal? Right, Daniel Jones might, I don't know if you guys seen, you've seen the video of Blake Martinez?
Yeah.
He has this ridiculous home gym, right? I mean, like, fully stocked home gym. Daniel Jones said he has, like, a makeshift home gym with some, you know, dumbbells in his house. Another guy might just have, you know, bands or, you know, no weights to work with. Like, this is what I think the strength and conditioning people around the league are going to have to deal with, is finding a workout that really everybody can do. And it's going to really vary depending on the individual and the situation they're in. Because you can't ask guys to go out. And I know there are guys out there training right now. Like, there's still guys that go to some facilities. Because if you think about it, if you're a fringe guy, right, they're looking at it as, we can't afford to stop working. And I know there's guys like this out there. I've spoken to some guys where they feel like they can't stop working because the second they do, they're going to find themselves, when if things come back to normal, out of the league.
Such a weird situation that we're in right now. It's Jordan Renan, 98.7 ESPN. So we've talked a lot about this, and every time I ask Mike Tenenbaum about it, Giants moving down in the draft, he's like, yes, absolutely, that's what they should do. With everything going on, do you think it takes away almost any chance of the Giants trading out of that four spot, you know, stockpiling a couple more picks and moving back in the first round?
I wouldn't say I'd say it limits them a little bit, right? Because the Tua thing to me is the one, like, to not be able to bring him into your own building and have him looked at by your own doctors, and really, that to me is the one, right? That's, if the Giants trade, there's a good chance it's going to be centered around Tua, right? Or if the Lions want to take a Cuda, whatever it is. Or if somebody decides that they want Isaiah Simmons, right, even. So this is one for the Giants especially that is going to come down to, okay, where we're at when it comes to draft day. Because, first of all, the team in real position of power, we know, I think we all can agree on, is the Detroit Lions, right?
Uh-huh.
In regards to trading. So the Giants are kind of stuck in a wait-and-see spot anyway. They can't – nobody's going to trade with the Giants. Let's say the Dolphins said right now, here's the offer, let's make it, you know, let's come to an agreement. They couldn't do that because then someone else would charge us out, oh, they were getting to a – we want two, and now we'll just move up to three. So the Giants aren't in a position where they're going to be able to make something until – draft day, the day before, whatever it is, until everything kind of shakes out. So I think for them, we'll see where we're at when the time comes. And what are we now? 4 weeks from the draft, pretty much?
3 weeks.
A little less? Yeah, 3 weeks. So we'll see where we're at that time. It's hard to imagine things changing much. But, yeah, it's going to be tough to trade out of there, considering the situation right now and considering the uncertainty, in my mind, with Tua.
Jordan on joins us here in the
show. They should. They need to protect their investment in Daniel Jones, in my opinion. Like, you have to think about that long term, and that's an offensive tackle.
All right, so I wanted to ask you that question. Are we in a situation now where, let's just say that, you know, there is no movement, the Giants stay at four? I mean, are you getting the impression that Dave Gettleman is in full-bloom love with Isaiah Simmons, or would he consider taking the best offensive tackle?
I think they're both on the board right now. Like they're top tackle or Isaiah Simmons. I can't say one way or the other another right now, to be honest with you, that with full conviction that they're definitely gonna, because let's think about it. They need a defensive player, a defensive playmaker, right? Now I understand he doesn't play a premium position, Isaiah Simmons, right? He's not gonna be a natural middle linebacker, he's not gonna be a natural edge rusher. You know, these are not the, so wherever he lands, safety, linebacker, these aren't your normal premium positions, but they need a defensive playmaker in the worst way possible, right? But they also need an offensive tackle because what is their future at offensive tackle and protecting Daniel Jones? Nate Solder is not part of their long-term future, right? They just signed a bridge guy in Cameron Fleming, so they have nothing. That's a huge need for a team that has just invested the number 6 overall pick in a quarterback. You have to protect Daniel Jones long term. And this is an opportunity to do it. So I ideally, and I agree with Tannenbaum, they need to trade down, right? Because then they could get, then it's sort of the best of both worlds. You add to your stockpile of picks, you can get your tackle and the defensive playmaker with hopefully another later first round pick.
Jordan, I agree with your position that they need to think about taking tackle with their first selection no matter where it is. But let's say for a minute that Isaiah Simmons is going to be the guy. I know the Giants have been building this odd front 34 defense the last couple of off seasons, but it doesn't feel like Simmons is a fit in that. So would the Giants, under new defensive coordinator Patrick Graham, be willing to rip up all the work that they've done the past couple of years and transition to a 4-3 front?
I don't think they would do that. I think they're going to be a versatile front anyway and do, you know, play a lot of 4-3. But I don't think they're going to be willing to completely rip it up and say we're not, you know, that our base is going to be a 4-3. I really don't. Here's the question, Chris. What do you even see Isaiah Simmons at? Like, that's the question, right? I think that's the question a lot of teams and a lot of coaches are asking. You could do a lot of things with him, right? What's his primary position?
At his best, I think he's Brian Urlacher. Because Brian Urlacher played a little bit of safety in college as well. And I know they had an unorthodox defense out there. But to me, that's what he projects as. But again, you're talking about a very specific scheme. And it's not the scheme that the Giants currently employ in their base defense. So that's why the Isaiah Simmons to the Giants conversation is interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people tell me also they see him as Derwin James. It's sort of like that safety, play in the box role, even be a pass rusher, cover, you know, nickel. So it really depends on what you view him as, right? I really think that's a huge part of this conversation is you have to start as, well, what position do you even view him at?
He's not a safety, Jordan. Not every down. He's 240 pounds. He's going to be a 240-pound safety? No.
I mean, these guys are freaks. I mean, do you know how many 240-pound guys run 4-3 something?
not a whole lot, but I'm just saying in the history of the NFL, I don't think we've seen guys that are 240 pounds playing safety. Sean Taylor was probably the closest thing.
That's why the comp is Derwin James. He's, 230-plus pounds. And they're close, and he's that big a physical freak and that talented that that's how you can kind of use him. And but I agree with you. I think his primary role needs to be at linebacker from when I talk. Most people I talk to seem to think that. And it is an odd fit. But this team needs defensive playmakers in the worst way. They could use them in a lot of different ways. So it does make sense still, right? It'll be their job, the coach's job, to find a way to use them and maximize them. And I don't know if they're willing to overhaul their complete scheme, but I think they're willing to find ways to make a player of that talent and take him and utilize him on a regular basis, even if it's in multiple roles.
Jordan Renan here with us on 98.7 ESPN. Jordan, I'd appreciate not a rushed answer, but as quick an answer as you could possibly give here. If they did go offensive line, do you have any idea which one of the tackles, be it Wirfs or Becton or even Wills, they like the best?
I know that there's a lot that they like about Wirfs. So I probably, but this is just my educated guess at this point. So I probably would go in that direction. I know that they like the physicality of Becton. He's another player that they like. But then there's the wild card in this whole equation, right? And when you're talking about Wills, is everything the Giants have done so far has been done with the idea that everyone that was kind of brought in as a coach had a connection to Joe Judge, right? He likes the familiarity. He likes the fact that a lot of these players that came in, they have connections to Patrick Graham, to Joe Judge. Again, the familiarity thing is a big deal. How much is that going to be a factor with Wills? I mean, he's going to go and he's going to talk to Nick Saban about him, right? How much does that play into it, and how much pull does Joe Judge have? I think we're going to find out. My impression right now is that he's playing a big part in all the decisions being made. Like, and of course, any head coach is going to play a big part, right? But I think that his influence in there is greater than the head coach's has been in a little while. I really do think that, obviously, since Tom Coughlin.
All right, Jordan, last one, and I promise this is the last one from me. You mentioned, and we spent the last couple minutes talking about all the different obstacles and hurdles and everything else, how Joe Judge being a rookie coach, new offensive system, Daniel Jones has some dumbbells and some bands. How is he going to get the appropriate? I mean, here's what doesn't make any sense to me. So you got a rookie head coach, but then the report comes out that Dave Gettleman appears to be on the hot seat. I mean, what have you heard about that? And how does that doesn't really line up for me. I mean, it seems like you're rebuilding. So why would you expect all of a sudden now this team to make these huge strides?
Well, I don't think this is actually anything new, to be honest with you. Like, when they made the decision, they were obviously waffling back and forth of whether they should clean the whole regime out, right? I mean, we know this. This happened months ago. So once they didn't, and I understand they operated even this offseason as if it's a team that's rebuilding. But if things don't work out this year, and the Giants go, I don't know, let's say 4-12 or 5-11 again, and Dave Gettleman as the general manager is now sitting there with what, 5-4-4, so it's at a 13 wins in 3 years as general manager. I mean, do you think they're going to sit with him? You think they have that kind of patience in them?
My point is now all of a sudden
Joe Judge might want to bring in his own guy.
Okay, so they'd be comfortable with Joe Judge bringing in his own guy then. I guess that's where I wanted to go. Because then all of a sudden now you have the vicious cycle of having these prearranged marriages where you fire the GM and bring in a new one and he's going to want his own guy.
I mean, if Dave Gettleman and the Giants don't win, Joe Judge will get an opportunity to bring in his own guy. There's no doubt in my mind. Really, I mean, think about it. How is that possible? If the Giants continue to struggle and a bunch of his moves don't work out, and not even the moves this year, the pre-existing moves, the ones that are still hanging there, that Jabril Peppers doesn't become a real playmaker, right? I mean, all these things, if Dexter Lawrence and DeAndre Baker are just guys, like all these things start adding up, the Giants aren't going to be able to sit there and Joe Judge is going to sit there and be like, all right, this is great. This is all going well. So, yeah, he'll get an opportunity to bring his own guy. If things don't go well and they keep losing.
Jordan, one more for me. I got to ask you about the report that you had about the criticism from within the organization on DeAndre Baker. Just how concerned are the Giants about DeAndre Baker?
There's definitely concern there. Last year was not a good year for him. I mean, there was a bunch of incidents. I mean, Chris, you know this. Falling asleep in a meeting room is not the most uncommon thing in the world. But there was a lot of, you know, things to be a little concerned about DeAndre Baker. And I look, they're going to put him in there. And
is it a little concern or is it a lot of concern, Jordan? Gauge the temperature of the building.
Well, they did switch coaching staffs, right? So I think the new coaching staff believes that they can figure it out. But I think the people that are left there that were involved in the selection of DeAndre Baker are concerned with where they're at. I would put it out as high concern. That's what I would say. I wouldn't say, like, sound the alarms emergency, because he did get better as the season went along. But there are also signs of things that were there that they're concerned about for sure.
And on that note, Jordan, we appreciate your time. Stay safe, stay well, best to your family, and we will talk to you as we move towards the draft.
You too, guys. Stay safe. Okay, cut the supermarket out. Just, you know, curbside pickup. That's limit all risk.
I think you're right, and thank you for that. And he's right. Why are you not having home delivery?
I don't have grocery. I mean, I do have some of the grocery. I mean, some of the stuff does get delivered, but I mean,
find your own produce to cook with. Don't you want to do that on your own? You don't want anybody picking that out for you.
In a perfect world, of course, I'd like to pick out my broccoli and cauliflower and things. But you know what? If I can't get the organic egg that I'm looking for now, then so be it. I'm staying in the house.
Rico. I'm not going to let them abuse you this way.
No, I took all the proper precautions. I mean, what am I going to do? I mean, you could still, I mean, if it's delivered and you have someone that hands are all over your produce and you don't wash them the right way, I mean, you're still putting yourself at risk. I had a mask. I had gloves. I didn't even touch the credit card. I disinfected the credit card. I mean, had glasses on. I did what I needed to do.
Yeah.
Walked fast.
Like you're going to do an experiment in high school, glasses on?
It looked like a scene from Breaking. Like I had a jacket with a hood up, glasses. I had a mask. I had gloves. I had my own bag.
Got those Eric Dickerson, Antoine Carr glasses, huh?
Yeah, the rec specs. I had the rec specs on. Racquetball glasses.
You should have taken a picture of what you looked like going into the supermarket.
No, I did not like doing it. I had anxiety the entire time. I'm not going to lie about it. And then you have to wipe down all the groceries once you get them.
Of course. Of course. Schools will, of course, survive and communities will thrive. But for student athletes who have lost their senior seasons due to this pandemic, 98.7 ESPN would like to salute you for accomplishing great achievements in scholastics and athletics. Please email us at 987ESPN@gmail.com to tell your athlete story. And we'll do our best to share those stories. Like the Ramapo College Don LaGreca's alma mater men's volleyball team. Coach Mike writes us to say, undefeated in conference play, put themselves in a great position to win the conference and qualify for the NCAA tournament for the first time in program history. The seniors on the team had been working toward this goal for their entire 4 years at Ramapo. They're all great student athletes, excelling both on and off the court. Sorry your season ended unceremoniously, but we congratulate you on your great achievements to this point. The men's volleyball team at Ramapo College, Don LaGreca's alma mater. So congratulations to them. You ever play volleyball, Rick?
Beach volleyball, yeah.
Yeah? It's not so easy.
No, it isn't. Cassie's sister played volleyball all the way through high school. And then when I was out in L.A. for a couple months, I mean, all the hockey guys usually after you're done training and everything else, you go down and play some beach volleyball. It's a great workout.
It's exhausting.
It's awesome.
Chris, I imagine you would be quite a terror on the volleyball court.
Nah, for some reason, that's just one of those sports that I struggle with, Dave. Seems like I should be good at it, just stand at the net and block all the shots, but no, I wasn't very good at it.
Could you imagine looping the ball up for him to hammer it home? I think people would run to other states.
Oh, it seemed like a no-brainer.
Right.
But have you ever thrown Canty something to try to catch? He's like a seal.
Yeah, there's a reason why I play defensive end and not tight end. Yeah.
Can't catch anything. It's like he's got flippers.
You ain't right for that. You ain't right for that.
What did Jordan say that you liked? Because, I mean, he said one thing that I don't know if I loved. But
listen, it's not a positive thing at all. But, like, the byproduct is potentially interesting. And that is, if they move on from Dave Gettleman, that Joe Judge would be very involved in hiring and helping hire the next GM.
Yeah, but what is Joe Judge?
But so at least they would be on the same page, is my point. At least you wouldn't have the Maritish contingent saying, all right, here's your new GM, find a way to get along. At least it would be, I get it. Joe Judge has done nothing up to this point, but at least you want these two to be on the same page and to work well together and to like each other and to know each other, right?
I guess so, but I mean, it's again exactly what the Jets did. You got an unproven
coach. Yeah,
that
would be following the Jets game plan to an exact T, 100%. But I guess the thing is, if you don't believe that Dave Gettleman is good at his job, then you would look forward to the day where he's no longer the general manager, right? At least it gives you a chance to get somebody that's competent in that spot and somebody that shares the same football philosophy as your head coach.
But, Chris, we said this last year with the Jets. If there is, I mean, you name the percentage. If there's any thought at all that Mike Maccagnan would be on the hot seat, or you didn't think he was great at his job with where the team was, then you just fire him. I mean, we're sitting here talking about how the Giants are rebuilding, and you look at their schedule and everything else, and I know you can't just go by schedule and what's on paper. We're going to see how it plays out. But, I mean, you'd lean right now towards they're not going to have a great season.
Not at all.
I mean, if that's the case, man, be realistic. Then you're going to fire Dave Gettleman. You should have fired him when you fired Pat Shurmur then, if that's the thought.
Rick, you're absolutely right. Even the owner admitted that the general manager has to improve his batting average. John Mara sat at the podium at the beginning of the offseason and said that. So clearly, Dave Gettleman leaves a lot to be desired in his role. Now, yeah, he found the quarterback. You'll give him credit for that. But, I mean, Mike Maccagnan found the quarterback, and that didn't save his job. So, I mean, I look at it from the standpoint of if you're going to go down the road and hire a new head coach, go ahead and clean house, and you start fresh with a brand new regime, and you tie those two together. But the Giants decided that they didn't want to do that. Now, if they do move on from Dave Gettleman, the one added benefit that we're not thinking about and I think is significant would be the fact that this plan that John Mara went down the last couple of years in the twilight of Eli Manning's career would have been a failure. And I believe that they would relinquish some control back to the general manager in order to build the team in the way that he sees fit. And I think that's when the Giants can get back to be consistently competitive because you let football people make football decisions.
And now, I mean, now when you really look at where we're at with this virus and the self-quarantine, how hard the draft is going to be and everything else, it almost ends up coming around to bite you in the ass because now you're going to start behind the eight ball because there's going to be no OTAs. Who knows what training camp is going to look like, and you have a new head coach with a new system.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, all bad things. Not good.
I'm really concerned about Daniel Jones, man. I really am. And it's not because of anything that he showed in his rookie year. I thought he had a really good season for a young quarterback. It's just that you're expecting young players in year two to make a huge jump. I mean, that's usually the biggest jump that you see in NFL players' career from year one to year two because that's their first full off season with the club. I mean, you don't have that benefit. And for a quarterback that's going to be responsible for learning a new system under a new head coach, it just puts a lot of pressure on him. It doesn't set him up in the best position to jump off in year two.
Well, define jump. I mean, vertical-wise, he might be great. Seeing, I mean, the way Jordan describes it, he has a couple dumbbells and some bands to work out with in his home gym.
All he can do is jump jacks. Could you get stuff delivered to your home?
Yes. You just go on. I mean, you can go
Dave,
on,
they'll shut down the gym at Charlotte Latin School only for Daniel Jones to work out in. I mean, that's not even a question. That gym is like a college facility. But, I mean, to Jordan's point, you can't put that type of onus on the players. We're just in an uncertain time, and I don't think that it's a situation where NFL teams can assume that all of their players are going to have access to quality facilities that are going to be safe for them to work out in.
Yeah, I saw a video of Kyle Rudolph. Did you see that video yet, Dave?
No.
Where he got the I forget what the name of the device is, but the one that goes right on your wall.
Oh yeah, the air resistance machine that has that mirror that shows you the workout.
Yeah. which look pretty cool, but I mean, that's not, I can't imagine that that's giving you the same kind of, you're not getting the same kind of workout you get at an NFL facility.
None of this is the same. I mean, what it is for everyone is you're making the best of a horrendous situation. That's exactly what it is. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Ronnie in New Jersey. Ronnie, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on, Ronnie?
Oh, just enjoying myself at home. Like everybody else should be, right?
Well, there's not much else to do, so make the best of it, right?
Exactly. So I had an internship in 95 with my best friend that we played in high school together and we played against each other in college. So that was the first year the Patriots were actually sold out. So there were three interns, me, Pete, and Tate DeLay. So we had nothing to do. Basically, it was the first time they ever had a waiting list. So anybody that would call, you would just take their information and put them in the waiting list. So after a while, they had nothing else for us to do. I would sit in the locker room after Pete left, because Pete left early, and just see what the players needed before every meeting and every workout or whatever. But one day in the middle of August, it's about 90 degrees. We go out, they say, give us each a clipboard and say, you take this half of the stadium, Pete, you take that half of the stadium, and I want you to go around to every seat and go to what because they were bleachers, and say what number needed to be repainted on the bleachers. Imagine that.
Yeah. It was a horrendous stadium.
It was in between the 40s, there were chair backs to the first level. That was it. But otherwise, it was a college stadium, bleacher stadium. And we had to sit there and go through every row and mark down what seats needed to be repainted for the number.
Wow. And now look at the Patriots. And thanks for the call, Ronnie. And now they are, right, it's Patriots, it's Cowboys, it's who else? Are that upper echelon of organizations that do it the right way in the NFL.
Steelers, Packers.
Mm-hmm. Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Baltimore is... I don't even know if it's quiet anymore. Baltimore is a really well-run organization.
Yeah, it's a well-oiled machine,
right?
Did you watch any of the Ravens Super Bowl versus the Niners?
Yes, last night on NFL.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was a good Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was, absolutely.
I can't stand Joe Flacco's face though. For some reason, he's got that look on his face.
He does have that look,
doesn't he?
He does have that look. That punchable face look?
Yes.
He does have that.
Yeah, he's on the list.
100%.
It's amazing how good he was in that postseason, though.
He's really good. What was it, 11 touchdowns and no interceptions?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the great postseasons in the history of football.
I mean, that bomb that he threw to Jacoby Jones in that Broncos game, that was really kind of the jumping off point for him on that run, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was. Yes. He was awesome in that postseason. Yeah. I mean, he was great in every game. He really was. He was a complete difference maker.
Yeah. That wouldn't have been a good game if they didn't have that power outage, by the way.
No, because you think the Ravens would have run away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Let's go to our dear friend, Andy and Merrick. Andy, you're next up on 98.7.
Good morning, guys. You ready for your questions?
We're ready for our questions.
All right. You've been killing it the last few days, so we're going deep into your memory bank.
Oh, God.
Chris, September 19th, 2005, you recorded your first sack. Who was the quarterback?
Mark Brunell.
Yes.
Nice. Nice.
He was a Washington Redskin at that point.
Monday Night Football.
Rick.
Speaking of Mark Brunell, doesn't Tua sometimes when he throws the football remind you a little bit of Mark Brunell?
Yeah, I can see that.
A little bit?
Mm-hmm.
That was my birthday, 2005. What birthday would that be for me?
15 years ago.
So
how old are you?
I've been 24, right?
Yeah, well, you're 39 now?
I will be, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I'd be 24. All right, what do you got for Rick?
Rick, January 27th, 2001.
Okay.
To whom did you allow your first NHL goal?
It was against the Sabres.
Yes.
Because I missed my flight. I was supposed to back up a game against the Rangers. Got snowed in, missed my flight. They brought two of the same leg pads. It was the Sabres' first goal. I'm going to go with Miroslav Satan.
It was Dave Andrasen.
Oh.
5:14 into the first period.
That's a good question.
David.
Yeah, we lost that game. What was the score of that game? 3-2 we lost?
I think it was 2-1 or 3-1, something like that.
Yeah.
David, you've killed it on baseball, football, and hockey, so we're going to give you a Knicks question.
Oh, God.
Only two players in the history of the New York Knicks have worn jersey number 51. Can you name them?
51.
This may be, you may have to call in the Google GIMP. This is a tough
get him in here. Get him in here.
Get in. Bring in the GIMP. 51. Come
You've
on,
been killing
David.
Every other question. I had to up the ante here.
Well, did Ron Artest? Ron Artest? Did he?
Meta World Pieces One. Yes.
Yeah. Oh God. 51 for the Knicks.
If you get this, I'm just saying right now.
Now I'm thinking, and I don't know that this is right, but there was a player.
It's a big man, Dave.
The play. You know the answer.
It's a big man. Yeah.
Is it Michael Doliak?
Oh, ding, ding, ding.
From the University of Utah.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
Make me sick.
Well, you should be proud. Thank you for your time and your questions, as always, Andy. Why would I make you sick? You should be proud.
It's unbelievable.
I'm impressed, Dave.
Impressed.
That's going to the well.
From the University of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a terrific player under Rick Majerus. In college, not so much in the NBA. Yeah. Because once he comes to the Knicks, that kind of fades away.
Wow. Well, don't disrespect the Knicks now.
No, God forbid I do anything anything like that. But by the way, and we got to get into this in just a moment. We'll get into the ridiculous bracket that they have for the college basketball greatest player.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.